Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Podnuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., and I am back in the lovely city of Fort Lauderdale and back on track with getting out some regular content for our listeners here. And we are back in the saddle, and we are going strong today, folks. I am bringing on a great guest who I think is going to wow your socks off. And I am here with Mike Panaki. Mike is the owner of a company called Network Protocol Specialist. Now, that may not mean much to a lot of the listeners now, but when I tell you that Mike has been the person that if you had to go out and look on the internet for any sort of video or any sort of training that had to do with one of the Fluke products that I talk about, the Link Sprinter, the Link Runner, if you want to go all the way back to the Etherscope, all of those things, you're going to find Mike Panaki out there in internet land doing these videos. Before I say more, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great, Marvin.
So
glad to be on.
Okay. So you have been the guy that I have watched and learned from many of years of how to use these tools. And from my perspective, just simply basic network diagnostic testing, some frontline testing with some of the tools. But you have been around doing this for quite some time. You were, I mean, if we go all the way back to Fluke, back in, what, 98?
Well, so back in 96, 97, I left the company I was working with and went to work for a company called Pine Mountain Group.
Okay.
And Pine Mountain Group at the time was the leader in network analysis training. In fact, it's funny how many people I get that come back to classes I'm doing and so on and go, didn't I come to a class that you went to back at Pine Mountain Group days? Uh-huh. Yes. And so got to work on some interesting projects with those guys.
All right. So back then, and now I know that your company now, in a sense, you are not just, you know, regular network support company. Your company actually goes out and assists companies with finding and solving network solutions. Do I have that quite clear?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
And then you also are the certified trainer when it comes to the copper and fiber training for Fluke's Versiv products, correct?
Exactly. So if somebody goes out and buys a DSX 5000 or DSX 8000 OptiFiber Pro, CertiFiber Pro, and they want to get certified, which is required by a number of contracts out there, then we provide both on-site training as well as public classes around the United States on that.
All right. So my good friend Nathan Drager up in Wisconsin is going to want to talk to you at some point.
Love to talk to him about that.
All right. So let's put a framework to what we're going to do, what I hope we're going to do. So I've been on this podcast and others talking about the benefits and necessity of technicians carrying around these tools like the Link Sprinter, the Link Runner, my favorite, the One Touch.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, you know, the big thing is people look at the price of these. And when if you go to, say, your Home Depot, your Lowe's, you can find little network testers for $30, $40, $50. You can hop on the Amazon and find some cheap testers. But in a sense of what people really need, I always tell them, look, if you want to go with the best, you got to go with, well, at the time it was Fluke, now it's NetScout, now it's going to be whatever Stone Caliber calls the handheld tools and soon. But let's go back from your perspective. What was it that drew you to these set of tools?
So I guess, the big thing was back, let's go way, way back when I was a LAN administrator and I started going out. I was building a network for the company I was working with and we were using Banyan Vines as a network operating system for communicating between devices. And Fluke had their LAN meter. And actually what's kind of fun is when I go back and look at all these different tools, I still have one of each of every one of these. So I've got I've got a land meter that does token ring. I've got, and what's interesting is to see how far ahead Fluke was at the time with the particular tools that came out. So I bought one of these land meters because what we found, and I hadn't put the word on it yet. And since then, in my presentations, I have put the word on it, and it's the S word. And the S word is should. And so often in our business, we use the word should. I say, Marvin, this connection should give you this network. You should be able to get an IP address. You should be able to get to the internet. And should isn't good enough. Should is one of those things that we as professionals don't use. Because if we're professionals, we need to have the tools in place to make sure that we get an answer. So back in the day, I bought a land meter so that I could definitively say whether something was working or not. And at the same time, I was heavily using the old Network General Sniffer. Mm-hmm. In fact, in cleaning out all of my stuff over the last few weeks, I came across a couple of Dolch computers. And I don't know if you ever had a chance to work with those, but they are a luggable computer. And I swear my arms are about 3 inches longer after running through airports with those. And, you know, we could capture 10 meg Ethernet and see what was going on. But what one of the things I've discovered is the wire doesn't lie to us. If we can see what's going on, we can get to the root of the problem quickly. So when I see organizations struggling with problems week after week, month after month, it's not because they're not really good troubleshooters. It's because they're not looking at exactly what's going on. And once we can get down to that, once we can get to that packet, once we can get to that piece of the process that isn't working right, solving the problem becomes trivial. And that is where this whole line of tools has really come into over the years. And we're not working with a little home network. In most cases, we're working with a network that is that costs companies hundreds of thousands of dollars to be down. And this is one of the things I've always found interesting is this disparity between when a company says it costs us $200,000 to be down, but they won't spend the money necessary on tools to help resolve those problems, or even better yet, prevent them from happening.
Right. Absolutely. And that's similar to when you and I first spoke, I told you how I came to this scenario where, you know, I'm just a, at the time, just a, you know, computer guy who had started his own business and was doing on-site work and had just started dealing with business networks. And I was at a client who was having intermittent issues. And as far as I could tell, the computer was fine. The user program was fine. The network switch that I had put in was fine, but I couldn't tell if the cable was fine. Right. And, you know, at the time, I literally was one of those guys that had, I think mine was $25 or $30 because that was, you know, that was about as much as I thought I needed.
Right.
And I'm arguing with the cable guy. And I remember getting to the point where I said, you know what, because he didn't even have a tester, which was ridiculous. And so I actually, right. you know, went out and got a better tester, came back, found the problem. Because the one I had was just something that had the four green lights.
Right. You know. Told you the pairs were good.
Yep. And that's like, oh, well, four green must be good. But I went and actually spent money. And at the time, it was a lot of money for me. So, yep. I mean, I had to throw it on the credit card. It was $1,000 or $1,100 or whatever. But from that point forward, I swore I was not going to lose an argument based on whether something was good or not if I could do it. Yep. So that's where I got to investing in these products and in these tools so that I wouldn't have those issues. Now, granted, they still come up and it doesn't solve every single problem, but it certainly helps a whole heck of a lot to have them in your tool bag.
It sure does.
So let's now talk about, I guess, the sense of, well, let me go back to something you said. We talked about the fact that, you know, should isn't good enough.
Right.
And I've mentioned the fact that, you know, technicians are really not willing to spend money on these tools. And I know I've actually had discussions with techs where, you know, we're at the point where techs will spend $100, $200 and want to get by as much as they can. A lot of times I want to have them jump up to, say, the Link Runner AT.
Okay. Yeah.
Or if they're doing cable testing, the Cable IQ.
Right.
So how is it that you talk to people? What is it that you tell them to help convince them that they have to spend the money on good tools?
Part of it is, what is their time worth? And so, you know, in many cases, let's take the Link Sprinter mm-hmm. for an example. And, you know, the Link Sprinter is a funny one because I was doing a class at Interop, and I've been doing classes at pretty much every Interop since 97. And I had talked about a number of open source tools. But when we got to doing some of the physical layer testing, making sure that that connection's working well, I said, you know, as much as I'd like to give you something free to use for this, I said, the best tool that I've seen on the market is the Link Sprinter. And I started talking about it a little bit. And then I said, you know, does anyone have a Link Sprinter? And one guy raised his hand and he said, I just ordered 10 of them. And I said, how do you like them? And he goes, I don't know. He goes, I just ordered them. You said this is a good tool to have. And so I went on Amazon and I ordered them. And what we were able to show is that when we take a tool like the Link Sprinter, it's going to ensure that we have a DHCP address, that we have a link, that we have PoE, that we can get to our default router, and we get out to the internet. And so that alone answers a lot of the questions. If I can do those things, especially if I'm getting out to the internet via a URL, that tells me DNS is working as well.
Right.
So now those basic key services that I need for most every device on the network, I know that they're working. Plus, what I really like about it is it's going to take those test results and it's going to upload those to Link Live. And what I've discovered as a consultant is oftentimes I'll go out and I will run the tests before I do anything, and I'll document that. And after I fix it, I'll run the tests again, and I'll show that. Because what I find is, if I can show them this is what it looked like before and this is what it looked like after. Now, internally, what I find is people are worried oftentimes. They're worried that if they fix so many problems, that nobody is, they're not going to see value in that work that they're doing because the network's going to be running. And this goes back to another one of my theories that I learned when I was living up by Yosemite in California. And I spent about 4 years on the volunteer fire department up there. What I discovered is people like firefighters. People hate the fire marshal. And the difference between them is the firefighter comes in and solves the problem. Your house could be on fire, and I show up with a 2.5-inch hose line and start dumping 250 gallons of water a minute into your living room, and you are cheering me on. But if I show up in your office and I say, Marvin, you guys can't stack stuff in there, you can't daisy chain those power cords, you can't do this, you hate me. And it is common where we see the person that's trying to prevent the building from catching on fire is not the person that we like.
Right.
So the result is that oftentimes we get a lot more gratification from solving problems than we do preventing. So what I find is by going in and documenting what was wrong and what I fixed, at the end of the day, when I go back and get my review, even as an internal person, I can say, here's all the things I found and I fixed before they became problems that caused a system-wide outage. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that just the documentation alone is something absolutely. That... You know, with the Link Sprinter, the fact that I can get an email immediately on my mobile device or in my email that shows them, yes, it's working. All of these key components are green.
Yep.
And the fact that this little device sent out an email showing me, yep, here's your DHCP address, here's your server, here's your internet connection, all of this is good. A lot of times that all I have to do is send that with my invoice and it's paid.
Well, and the fact that if we have CDP or LLDP turned on, that it's going to tell us what switch and port we're connected to.
Right.
I was at a client site and a PC couldn't get on the network. And so one of the guys starts crawling underneath the desk. He sees it doesn't get a DHCP address. He starts crawling under the desk. And we've all been in those offices where the desk has a solid back on it. It's been jammed up against the wall. Can't get to the wall plate. And he's trying to see what the jack number is. And I said, whoa, 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 whoa. Here. And I had a Link Sprinter with me. I plugged it in, connected my phone to it, and I could see what switch and port we're connected to, and I could see what VLAN we're on. So I could, and I said, well, we're on VLAN 15. He said, wrong VLAN. And he goes, I'm going to go trace this out. And I said, whoa, I can tell you that we're on this switch on this port. So all you need to do is SSH into that switch and change the VLAN on it. There was no tugging on wires. There was no pulling it, you know, having to go in, which too often we get wrong. I unplug it from the switch. I go, hey, Marvin, did the link light go out on the back of the PC? Yeah. Uh-huh. And you say no. And so then, you know, you go, oh, shoot, I plug it back in again, try another one. And so what we find is that by going in and having that information, it reduces the amount of time that we spend. And if I type that in as a comment and reply to that email, now I've associated that wall jack with that switch and port. So the next time I have an issue, I know what switch and port they're connected to, and I don't have to look through bridge forwarding tables. I don't have to go out to that office and try and track it down.
You know what? That's a nice little tip to let the technicians know, a lot of them that are just starting with the Link Sprinter. Yes, you get the email, but if you reply to the email, it's almost like continual documentation that adds to the link live, that you can just keep going back and looking at that. And now, I haven't done a ton of setup there, but you can set up folders on link live. Yep. And so you can actually group together your test so that you have your history kind of cataloged inside of link live. So just a tip there, folks, be sure to reply to the email with your notes or with your, you know, even if you send it to your customer. You know, it's again documented inside of Link Live for for later use.
Well, and here's the great thing with the Link Sprinter is that if I set all of my technicians up with Link Sprinters, and there's kind of this hierarchy I found, and people say, well, how many of these should I get? My attitude is anybody that plugs anything into the network should have a Link Sprinter. You know, desktop person, phone person, all of them. Just plug that in, run the test. Because now you have this army of people out there all collecting information, switch port, voltage, you know that things are working properly. Once I can go in and do that, now I start building that database. And oftentimes I see people go out, buy something like a Link Sprinter and not bother setting up Link Live. Link Live is free. And that is that glue. It is the system that holds all of these things together that allows me to take that information I collected with the Link Runner AT, with the AirCheck G2, with the Link Sprinter, with the OneTouch, pull all that together and really have all that information centrally located.
All right. And just so that we make sure, so when you get a net, well, I want to say NetScout, but they just got bought. So right. Any of these tools, link-live.com is the site we're talking about, Link Live, where it will, if you associate your product to your account there, anytime you create a test that sends the report, in which a lot of these you can set up to automatically send. I think the Link Sprinter, you don't have to do anything. It just sends.
But you have to go in and claim it.
You have to claim it, right?
That's and then the rest of them, as long as you've said, upload the report, as long as you've claimed it to Link Live, it'll attempt to try and upload that report automatically.
And the reports we're talking about, so for the Link Sprinter, obviously, it's that initial test with DHCP and DNS and all of that. With the other tools, especially the OneTouch, I mean, you can get 20, 30, 50-page PDF documents.
Absolutely. And a CSV, and that's one that I really like, because oftentimes I will upload the CSV file, which will put it in a XML format that Excel will open with multiple tabs. So now, if I don't want 500 pages, I could go in and it'll give me the IP address, name, and MAC address of every device it discovered. And so by using that CSV file, that is a very, very powerful way to get the data where you can import it into a database or something else.
Now, interesting. I had known that that was there, but I had never used it. I just did the PDF. So that little section where it, and we're talking specifically about the OneTouch, where it will actually catalog every device on the network with the IP, the MAC. Does it do the switch port as well?
Yes. So here's the important thing with the OneTouch, and that is that we have to have discovered the switch. And the OneTouch is really a tool that's designed to look for everything being in the same IP subnet. So if my switches, my devices are in the same subnet, then the OneTouch will use SNMP to go out and figure out which port it's connected to. And that nearest switch information will be displayed in there.
Okay. So sending it in CSV, you can just simply extract that table out and do your manipulation or however you want to do that. Okay. I actually hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. Once it's in Link Live, we can create a whole series of filters based on the tags that we put in there, based on MAC addresses, testers, date ranges, and that can be exported as a PDF or a CSV as well. So even after we get it into Link Live, there's a lot of ways we could manipulate that data and then export that out of a few different formats.
Well, I'm just thinking of, we talk about documentation. One of the hardest things in network support is going back and documenting what you've done. If it's something where it can take those tables, I mean, just simply creating a spreadsheet of device and MAC.
Yep.
So if you're going to create, say, a wake on LAN text document for something, or if you just want to document everything that's on the network, I mean, having the ability to extract that out, you don't have to, you know, cut and paste or type, or it's there.
Yep.
So nice.
And then if you have people out there, plugging before they plug anything in, plug that link sprinter in and document the office, the cubicle, the wall jack, and get that into Link Live. Now we can go in, we can figure out what machine is attached to that port. We know where that port is, where that port goes. So how many times have you got into a wiring closet and the link light is out on a port? But you don't know, is somebody using that port? You need one more port, and you want to unplug one. By being able to document this and generate a report for that switch, we can now go in and get an idea of what our port occupancy looks like. And, you know, is there a device connected to the other end of that cable or not?
Nice. So you mentioned, I was thinking of something earlier you mentioned about a tech being somewhere and having to crawl around under a cubicle or whatever. I'm going to tell a quick story about a tech that, let's just say his name is Adam. And he's a local tech here that I've worked with for many, many years. And I've actually told him many times, you know, you can buy these tools. And he's like, well, why should I buy them when you have them? So I actually had a situation just, I think it was maybe 10 days ago, where I needed him to run down to a client where they had a phone system where the desktop, it was the pass-through phone to the desktop. And for some reason, the person couldn't connect to the printers on the local network. And I knew that they were on the wrong LAN or the wrong VLAN. And it was a matter of, okay, what port are they switched into? And they're obviously, like you said, in cubicles where he was never going to be able to see what the number on that jack on the wall was. And so I gave him my link runner and said, here you go. All you've got to do is plug this in and you'll see it right on the display. It'll tell you which switch, which port. And then you just go into the closet and move it. And it was something where in the past, if I had sent a tech, or even if I went myself, we'd be how long? I mean, we'd have to find somebody to help us move the cubicles. We'd have to get, a probe and try to, tone out, where we thought the cable was, or we'd have to find somebody to help, you know, pull the cubicles back far enough to, so we could, you know, get a flashlight and try to see it. But he was on site for probably 5 minutes.
Yep. Let you into the wired closet, or even find the wired closet right. In some cases.
And I know that the Link Sprinter, one of the things that has been touted is, now I will never do this. My tools go wherever I go. I will never send them, but these tools are so easy. You can send them to somebody and all you have to do is tell the end user, a secretary or somebody, just plug this into the cable.
Yep.
And because you can be anywhere, get that email or go into Link Live, you can get all your results without actually having to be on site.
Exactly. Yep. It's the kind of thing. And because what's the cost? And then of shipping somebody out there. And now you have the disruption of having to fly out somewhere. And I've over, you know, my career of troubleshooting, I've had enough situations where I've talked to somebody and I said, you know, when would you like me to come out? One of them, I'm here in Seattle, and I had a person that attended one of my classes at Interop, and he said, yeah, we were thinking maybe you could come out. And I said, when would you like me to come out? And he goes, we were kind of thinking maybe you could just go out and get in your car now. And they were down in Oregon. He goes, maybe we could just continue this call while you're in your car. And so I ended up running down to Portland and helping him do some troubleshooting. But, you know, it's one of those things where I can overnight something pretty quickly. And especially when we get into tools like the OneTouch, where we can use the remote capability through Link Live to remote in there. I don't have to set up any special firewall rules or anything like that. You could take your Link, your OneTouch, connect it up, and you could even invite me to your organization. Say, hey, Mike, I'm seeing something, not quite sure. And I could go out and I could see that OneTouch, and you could see it as well, sitting in front of it. So now I can look right over your shoulder.
I have loved that capability. Now, again, I'm not sending my tool
right
somewhere, but I have been at a place where I've gone, set it up in one part of the office and have gone to the other side of the building or another floor, but still had the ability to remote in and see what I needed to see, run whatever test I wanted to run. And that is phenomenal, being able to do that.
Well, and the fact that not only can I see what you're doing, but I could create a profile on my OneTouch on my end, push it out to yours. So now you have a series of tests to run. And I could start a packet capture on your OneTouch and then grab that trace file, that PCAP file, bring it back and use a tool like Wireshark to analyze that traffic back here on my end.
I didn't know you can push profiles from one to the other.
Yep. Yes. So I could save a profile on my OneTouch and then I could take and send that to you and put it in your profiles directory. And when you went to load a profile on your OneTouch, that new profile would appear.
Okay. We're going to have an entire show on the OneTouch, which, by the way, let me go back and let's mention something that I think some people want to know. You do boot camps.
Yes.
For the tools. And one of the boot camps is a 4-hour session. Yep. On all the features of the OneTouch. I've been to one of those. I've not been to the others. Do you do a boot camp for the Link Runner and the Link Sprinter?
I do. Okay. And so what I do is if people check enterprise.netscout.com and go to news and events, there's a page out there where it talks about the virtual training. And there the dates of when we'll be offering that training is out there. And I do 4 hours. Right now, I'm doing 4 hours on the AirCheck G2. I do 4 hours on the OneTouch, and I do 4 hours on the Link Runner G2 as well.
Okay.
And there's some recorded training that's available. If people have the OneTouch AT, like the AT2000, we've got recorded training on that. We're not doing that live anymore.
Okay. And just to kind of go back and recap, so we've kind of thrown these names around, but there is a plethora of these handheld testers. And the one that I have had people start with, obviously the Link Sprinter, And there's actually a couple of different models, but I tell them the Link Sprinter 300 is the one they can get. And basically, because it will add the features of the Wi-Fi hotspot that you can actually use your phone or mobile device and turn it into a cable tester that will actually show you the pinout and things of that nature. We have the step up from that, which is the Link Runner AT. Also two models of that, the 100 and the 200. Or the 1000 and the 2000.
1000, 2000.
Then we've got the, I have to look over because I forget that there's no longer an Etherscope, which I have one of those.
That was a good product.
I like that. There is the AirCheck, which is basically what I call it is the Wi-Fi version of the Link Runner. That you can go out and do Wi-Fi analysis, air quality testing, and a lot of the same features on the wireless network as you would on the wired network. We've got the One Touch. Which I love. And just released in the last year, which I don't want to talk about it now because I'm waiting. I'm waiting for my unit to be here in hand before I talk about it, the Link Runner G2. And
that is a phenomenal piece of equipment. I don't know. I've got a little YouTube video I did last year on playing around with it, doing some things. But that's so I'm looking forward to when you get it so we can sit down and talk about that.
We'll have a fest, festival about that one. And they just came out with a tester unit that is a companion to. Now, is it just a companion to the Link Runner G2, or can it companion to the other stuff?
So it is the it's the test instrument, and what it does is it looks just like a Link Sprinter.
Okay,
and it is a it's a little tiny Linux box that's running iPerf, and so the idea is that I can use this in combination with a tool like the AirCheck for measuring throughput. Because I can get, you know, if I get a good signal, well, that's okay. I mean, I look at things on the AirCheck G2, like my signal to noise ratio. And that's one of the things that the AirCheck G2 shows us that we don't see on a lot of other tools. And that's the that ratio of our signal to our noise. And this is why we can have five bars. We can have a really good Wi-Fi signal. But if we have a lot of noise, it's going to be really hard to figure out what the other end's saying. We're not going to get very good throughput. So by looking at that signal to noise ratio, we can get an idea, you know, we've got a good signal, but do we have low noise in there? The bigger that number is, the greater the gap is between our signal and our noise. So oftentimes, what kind of throughput am I getting out of this network? So, for example, there's a charity auction that I've been participating in for years up here, and I provided internet for them. So we set up a hotspot, and then we use some point-to-point equipment to shoot it down the hallway. So before I ever walk away, I want to make sure that that is doing what I expect it to do. So what I did was I put in this little iPerf device from NetScout. I plugged that into the router that connected to the internet. Then I could walk around the facility, and on my AirCheck G2, there's an iPerf test I can do. Now that iPerf test will work with a just you know iPerf I could put on my Mac, iPerf that I could put on a Windows machine, so I could use it with other devices. But here's the cool thing about that test instrument, and the test instrument will take and upload its information to Link Live. So when you plug that in, it phones home to Link Live. And it says, here I am. Here's my IP address. Now, when you go to run the iPerf test with the AirCheck G2, it will go out and it will find all those devices. It'll say, give me a list of all those endpoints from Link Live. So as a headless device, I don't have to try and figure out what its IP address is. It phones home and says, I'm located here. So by doing that, I now have an endpoint that I can do a test to. And So what I use it for is to validate that my network is doing what it's supposed to be doing. And that's another pretty neat feature with the AirCheck G2. So not only can I go in and connect to a network. So when I do my classes and so on, I've got a wireless network called NetScout. Well, I can connect to NetScout, and it's typically going to give me the AP that's got the best signal strength. But what if I have two APs that are close, and I want to make sure both of them are working? One of the things I like about the AirCheck G2 is that I can select which BSSID, which AP I'm going to connect to. So I can run a test and say, I want to connect to this AP, now I want to connect to this AP, now I want to connect to that AP. So I can be specific down to that access point where I'm connected. And that's a pretty handy feature.
So I noticed that shows up, but that is, so I almost call that a hidden feature.
Yes.
Because when you look at the AirCheck or even the OneTouch, it's not one of the first tests that you can see to select from. You actually have to go digging for that. But the fact that you can validate specific access points, I think is huge for customers that have multiples in an office.
Exactly.
So that is actually a great thing. And you can actually identify location, you know, of the device or where you're doing the test from. So that's one thing that I like to do is I'll go into a client and I'll make a location for each room.
Okay.
You know, around their office and say, okay, I'll go to this room. I'm going to run the test from here. I'm going to go to the next room and run the test for here. And I can show them, here are the tests. Here's this, you know, the SNR results, and here's the throughput.
Yep.
So that's my validation that your network is working properly or not working properly.
Well, and, you know, I was working with one of my clients up here in Seattle, and they were having problems with their guest wireless, where people would come in and they try and connect, and it would say they're connected, but then they'd be disconnected. So another feature with that AirCheck G2 I really like is the log and the fact that it shows me a log of that whole connection process. And when we went over and took a look at the log, what we saw was that we would go in and we would connect. The AP would say, you can associate with me. I'll authenticate you. Come on in. And then as soon as I got connected, it would send me a deauthenticate and kick me out the door. And it's like, but you said that you could connect me. And what we found was that if we rebooted the AP, that problem would go away for a while. I said, well, you know, this looks like one of the three R's, and our three R's are reboot, reimage, replace, right? And so that's one where we rebooted and that fixed the problem, but that's not a long-term fix.
No.
The long-term fix was going back in and taking a look at the firmware, and by upgrading the firmware on there, we were able to resolve that problem. Another feature on that AirCheck G2 that I really like is the roaming feature.
Yes.
And with the roaming feature, I can select like a default router or something like that, and I can walk around and it will show me which AP I'm connected to. And it will show me what my signal strength is on that. So now I could walk and I can make sure that as I move from one area to the next, I maintain that connectivity.
So something I just started playing around with is, you can actually modify at which level you want a device to roam.
Yep.
So if you want to make sure that somebody doesn't get a low signal before they lose connection, before they connect to the next access point, you can just change the settings so that, hey, if this drops below, you know, this level, go ahead and automatically switch to the next access point.
Exactly. And so this brings up one of the things with all of these tools. And that is, when I first started in this business, I went to Interop back in 95 and 96 as an attendee. And I went and met with some people that I talked to. And I said, you know, I need to get an answer. What are the right thresholds for this? And I got that answer that we all hate, and that's, it depends. Well, don't tell me it depends. tell me what the right answer is. And there's some things, like if we go out and take a look at PoE, there's in the IEEE specifications, there are very definite numbers. This is how much, this is the lowest voltage, this is the highest voltage, current, all that. But when we start getting into things like Wi-Fi, what we find is that what we're really looking for is how are the devices that we're using going to perform in our Wi-Fi environment? So then we need to begin understanding things like what's the receive sensitivity of those devices that we're deploying. So some companies I've gone into, no idea what they should set those to. Other companies are very definite. Our signal needs to be negative 65 or better. Mm-hmm. And if we don't get negative 65 or better, then we need to redo our wireless. We need to readjust that. So the more we understand about the equipment that we're trying to put in, the better we can go in and do things like on the air check set, our, when we do our auto test, we're looking at our air quality and things like that. What kind of signal strengths? How many APs do we see on the same channel? Do we see any adjacent channel overlap? In fact, speaking of overlap, one of the little graphs that they've added in there shows us our channel overlap. And I was in Vegas doing a presentation a couple years ago, and I was in the hotel room, and I saw that somebody was running a 40 megahertz wide channel at 2.4 gigahertz. And I was on the phone with my wife, and I said, I can't believe this knucklehead's running 40 megahertz. And she said, what network is it? I said, this Netgear 46. And she goes, that knucklehead is you. What do you mean that's me? And she goes, that's that travel AP that you carry with you when we travel, right? I said, yeah, it is.
She called you out.
She did. And she said, that's rude. That's like parking sideways across parking stalls, at a parking lot. And so I went in, and that AP never really said run 40 megahertz wide channels. What it did have is kind of a high throughput option. Mm-hmm. And when you turn that on, it would go from 20 to 40 megahertz wide channel.
Nice. So here's a question. So when I go out and do my Wi-Fi audits, from my perspective, my customers aren't really that sophisticated, let's just say. They just want to know that it works.
Yep.
But I've got one particular customer, well, two now, that are really in some high density areas where, they're in an office building. And if I turn on my device, I mean, I'm seeing, almost 100 access points.
Right.
So in terms of, how do you explain to customers what they need to understand about Wi-Fi and those types of environments? And, just simply showing them the number of bars and the throughput sometimes isn't enough.
Right. And one of the things that has probably been one of the most challenging things to explain to people that really don't work with Wi-Fi very much is this whole idea of adjacent channel interference and overlap. And this idea that in 2.4 gigahertz, we have 1, 6, and 11. And putting something on channel 3 isn't buying anybody anything. Because now we're not on the same center frequency. So you're interference to me. And we've had situations where we've actually gone around to some of the surrounding businesses and talked to them and said, if you're on channel 1 and I'm on channel 1, then we can use collision avoidance. Mm-hmm. You say, hey, Mike, I'm going to talk for the next 5 seconds and I won't talk. And then I can go in and say, hey, Marvin, I'm going to talk for the next 10 seconds and that will work. But trying to get in there and educate them on, if you see a bunch of people on channel, if you downloaded a Wi-Fi analyzer for your phone and you went out and looked and you saw all these people on 1, 6, and 11, you said, oh, I'll just get on 3. That's really not buying anything for anybody because channel 3 is just going to interfere with 1 and 6.
Interesting, because I know that some of the manufacturers of the access points now will do that roaming channel. And So especially in 2.4, so you've got the 1, 6, and 11. And then in the 5 gigahertz, you know, they open up a whole bunch more and people are like, well, I'll just jump on and make sure I'm not on, what is it, channel 44 is the default for 5 gigahertz. But it's the same issue there as the 2.4, right?
It is, but we don't, if we're using 20 megahertz wide channels, we don't have the same overlap. Okay. What we do run into with 5 gigahertz is using an 80 megahertz wide channel, let's say, you know, that I want to get that 1.3 gigabits per second that I was promised with my Netgear Nighthawk wireless router. And the issue that we run into there is that when I run those wide channels, it reduces the number of non-overlapping channels. So this is where, from a wireless standpoint, people really need to balance this. How many people do we want to have talking at the same time versus the throughput that you really need? And if we even go back to things like the OneTouch, one of the things I really like about the OneTouch is its ability to test TCP ports on devices. I can go in and build a test to say, is this port open? Is that port open? So if I come to you and I say, Marvin, what ports and what servers are you dependent on to get for this application to run? This S word comes up every time there, right? Well, it should use this server and it should only use these ports. Then I do a packet capture and I say, well, what about this? Oh, yeah, I guess it uses that port too. So it is understanding in every one of these cases, it's understanding what we need. So you and I are doing this podcast right now. How much bandwidth? And we could go in and do a packet capture and I could tell you how much bandwidth does this audio stream need? And a lot of it's about architecting our networks to meet those needs. A lot of times we don't need 1.3 gigabits worth of bandwidth. We only need, you know, 10 megabits, 5 megabits, 1 megabit. If I'm doing VoIP, I only need about 84 kilobits. So it's understanding what the requirements are, engineering a system that's going to meet those requirements, and then using tools like the ones we're talking about to go back and validate that it's actually doing what we said it was going to do. Hmm.
You just opened up so many doors of questions that I have, and we are not going to have enough time to go into all of them, but I do want to ask one question and then we'll see where our time is here. We talk about, you know, the Fluke / NetScout family of tools and how, you know, everybody knows that I've drank the Kool-Aid, you know, I'm all in.
Right.
And every now and then I have had to answer the question, you know, well, if I don't want to get the Fluke, what can I get? Now, I know that you've been involved with these tools a long time. Were there other testers that you looked at and evaluated in the beginning or even over the past few years that you've had to look at and say, okay, does this do what we think it can do in comparison to these Fluke tools?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, over the years, there's been a number of different testers that have come and gone. And a lot of it is that with these tools, there's enough breadth there. It's one thing to make a single use tool, and I could come in and especially with Linux and programming now, and there's a lot of that I could probably sit down and write something that would do some of this. And when we start getting into things like PoE and looking at our fast link pulse to see what's being advertised, that's where we have to really get into specialized electronics to do it. But earlier I talked about, you know, there's kind of a tool for everybody. We've got that link sprinter, and that's that tool that anybody that plugs something into the network should have. Then we've got tools like the Link Runner AT2000. Okay. That's got it can do copper. It can do fiber.
Yep.
So I can make sure that fiber, that I've got all my pairs rolled properly and I got my fiber hooked up. It's got that wire map port on there. So if all I need to do is make sure a cable's okay. And this was one where when I was setting up for this auction a couple weekends ago, I couldn't connect. I couldn't get a DHCP address. I connect to the wireless, but I couldn't get a DHCP address. And I did a quick test on the cable, and the cable was bad. And I'd even marked it with a pink dot, because it was one of those cables. Sometimes when I do classes, we'll throw a bad cable in on purpose, just to see how long it takes people to find it. And also to say, if you test the cable and it's good, we need to move on.
Right.
Don't keep coming back and saying it's a cable. We tested it, but having that wire map port on the side so we can do that cable test is an important one, because things like that little LED deal that you were using won't pick up problems like split pairs, where somebody has totally ignored the 568A or 568B wiring standard, and they've gotten continuity on all pairs, but they're all split across different pairs of wire.
Right.
And that's one that comes back and bites us once we start putting data on. But we find that that's a tool that, maybe I have one of those per site. It's a great way to go in, run the auto test, make sure I can get all my addresses, test the cable, find my switchboard. And then, you know, we move up to the air check. Those two are companions. In fact, we see a lot of kits get sold out there where you have both the air check and the link runner, because that's going to give you that same visibility into the wireless side of your network. Right. Then there's the big brother, the older brother, right? One touch. And then, you know, we've got the G2 module that can do 802.11ac. It can do inline, it can do fiber. And then if you really want to step up, there's the 10G module. And that's one where one of the features that they added to the OneTouch, I think it was this last January, was the ability to do 10 gig throughput testing between two OneTouches. And so with that feature, I've got a little Netgear. It's got 8 ports of gig and 2 10 gig ports on it. And the big question was, can it really do 10 gig? So by taking those two OneTouches and plugging it in there, I'm able to test that. And if I'm using SFP pluses, not only can I test the fiber, the switch, but I can use my SFP in there and make sure that's working as well. So that having that breadth of tools, I think, is one of the things that's really differentiated that whole line of products over the years. And it's one of the reasons why it's survived when others haven't.
Right. There are a lot of tools out there, but not a family of tools that can do all of this. And of course, now what happens to me is I have the OneTouch and I kind of forget about all the other tools.
Yes.
because I've got that. But, you know, the link sprinter, just as you said, every person that touches a network should have that. It's small enough to fit in your bag. So there's no reason not to be able to walk into a customer site without it.
So. Now, I can't tell you how many times I've chucked my Link Runner AT2000 across the room. I usually take the SFP out of it first, but just as a demonstration that they are tools that are designed to be dropped. And you know, I've mentioned interop a few times. I've really had the opportunity over the last almost 25 years now to be an attendee, to be a presenter. I was a lead network engineer on one of the shows. And what we found with that was we could have as many as, over the years, 900 vendors show up that all need to get on the network in the same day. And a lot of these tools came out of people from Fluke and NetScout coming to that show and using even test models of these. We had one where it was, I think it was the OneTouch or it was the Link Runner. We were trying it out, and you kind of got this feeling someone was looking over your shoulder. We turn around, and there's a guy with a TV camera looking through the clear plastic into the network operations center. We had to go out and explain to him that, you know, this product wasn't out yet, and we couldn't have that video getting out. But that was a good proving ground to really get out and make sure that these tools were doing exactly what people needed them to do, to get the answers quickly. Right. And you know, you've talked to people like James Kokoska. I mean, James, the people that are working on these tools live and breathe these technologies. And and what they're trying to accomplish in there.
Yeah. And James Karkoska is the CTO at NetScout. And I assume that he'll stay in that capacity with Stone Calibur, but I do need to give a little shout out to him because I feel a little embarrassed to say this, but I have two one touches.
Oh.
and one was broke.
Okay.
And, you know, and I've just been sitting on it, waiting to send it in to be fixed and all that. And James, when we did the show, I did a show with him, I think it's about five shows ago, and he actually got me a replacement for that. So I need to give a big old shout out to James. And now I once again have two fully functional one touch devices. So,
which is nice because then you can do throughput testing.
Well, I was going to say, now I can't do the 10G, but I can do the throughput testing. And
you bet.
We're going to talk about that. So, Mike, let me do this. First of all, ladies and gentlemen, I did have an outline and we did not follow it. because I wanted to talk more about some specific tips and stories and give people some really good ideas on how to use these tools. We ended up talking about some stories and some things, but Mike, do you have time where we can do a second show where we can get more specifically into some of these tools?
Absolutely.
All right.
I'd love to.
Great. So we're going to go ahead and end this show off, and this will be part one of our two-part series. I don't even know what it's called yet, but I'll come up with a great name. And Mike and I will come back and get more specifically into some of the tools. As we end off this show, Mike, I will reference everybody. Enterprise.netscout.com is where they can go and look for some of the trainings to find you in. Do you want to give out any other information about where people can contact you and learn more about what you do?
Sure. On YouTube, I'm Packet Analyzer is my YouTube username. So feel free to go out. I'm trying to do a better job of getting videos out there. In fact, today I was just out redoing some things in my video studio. That's one of the things I found over the years is that trying to get off the road as much and do more online training. And so putting videos together and getting those up on YouTube. So there's go out there, check that out and see what's out there. Uh-huh. Another, and you know, I'm going to throw a shout out to another website as well.
Okay.
Love My Tool.
Oh, I forgot about that one. I know that one.
And, but my good friend Tim O'Neill and Chris Greer, Tony Fortunato, all those folks out there, Paul Offord, have a tremendous number of articles, videos, et cetera, out there. You'll have to probably take it out of the block list on your firewall, but it really is. It's a good site out
there. Yep. I remember that site very, I've gone there. Yep, Tony Fortunato, watched a lot of his videos as well over the years. So, all right. All right, Mike, well, let's end off this show for everybody and get this posted, and then we will come back with part two of this. So, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Mike Panaki, Network Protocol Specialist, and we've just basically shared our love of the Fluke/NetScout handheld networking tools, and we'll be back with part two to get more specifically into some of the nice tips and stories that we've done over the years. So thank you very much for listening. And until next time, holla.